The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
What's this one now?
The Dance of Dragons. A true telling. By Grandmaster Munkin.
Well, that sounds like a proper story.
Sir Byron Swan wanted to kill the dragon Vega. He polished his shield for a week so that it was like a mirror. Then he crouched behind it and crept forward, hoping the dragon would only see its own reflection.
But the dragon saw a dumb man holding a mirrored shield.
And burnt him to a crisp.
Thus ending the dragon-slaying career of Sir Byron Swan.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Mr. Blog.
And I'm David.
And I'm Grace.
And this is Game of Microphones, episode 13. And this week we're going to be talking about season 5, episode 9. Now, what is it exactly? The Dance of Dragons, correct?
The Dance of Dragons.
I believe so.
Yeah, I kept getting confused. I kept wanting to call it A Dance with Dragons, but nope, that's the book, not the episode. How are you guys doing?
Good. And The Dance of Dragons actually is the book I've been reading on the train.
Oh, so you've actually been rereading it?
Well, no. Not A Dance with Dragons.
Oh, sorry. The Targaryen history.
I shouldn't say that. Yes, it's not actually called The Dance of Dragons, but basically it's based on this purported text by the Maester, The Dance of Dragons. And it's quite interesting. Princess Shireen, something bad happened, went into some detail about it in the episode.
Actually, that's the little audio clip that just starts off this this episode. I guess we should go ahead and just get started with what did you guys think of the episode before we go into our tops?
Well, it was disturbing and tragic, I also thought it was thrilling and intense. It was a good episode, not a great episode, not the best episode, but it was a strong episode, I thought.
David?
It definitely had its strong points, like the previous episode. A thrilling fight and battle scene that went on for quite a long time was really the centerpiece.
But
that's the positive. I would say there's an obviously controversial aspect to this episode, the death of Princess Shireen, which I'm sure we're about to get into. And I did not like that. I didn't think it was necessary, and I thought it was maybe a misstep on the part of the show. So that, to me, detracted from this week's episode.
Interesting. Overall, I liked it. I didn't really feel it was an episode 9 strong level episode. It ended very well. As far as whether or not some of that was necessary, I do think it's been projected this entire season. It moves into very ugly territory for sure. And any parent was certainly, I think, we can just jump into this aspect of it right now, just in terms of, I don't think Stannis any longer has any fans of watching the show who are going to be behind him at this point. I think that's the real thing. It's like, no, that pretty much ended anybody going, yeah, Stannis the Manus. It's pretty much like, no, dude, that was really messed up. I will disagree that it doesn't necessarily move things forward. I absolutely do think it does, not in a nice, pretty, happy way by any sort of thing. But actually, I found this really great little tidbit here, and I'll just interject this right now, discussing Greek mythology and the Trojan War. And Agamemnon, who was trying to lay siege to Troy, this was in a Wired article, by the way, about this episode specifically. But the forces of nature seem to be conspiring against him, the wind always blowing in the wrong direction against his ship. A seer revealed that in order for his military campaign to proceed, he had to make a very personal sacrifice to the goddess Artemis, his daughter, Iphigenia. I'm probably pronouncing that all wrong. In some tellings of the story, Artemis mercifully spirits her away at the last minute, sacrificing a deer instead, which is the sigil of House Baratheon, and the gift from Davos. But in most versions, Iphigenia dies on the altar, which ultimately leads to her mother murdering both Agamemnon as well as his concubine Cassandra, who happens to have the gift of prophecy, which then goes, will now Selyse turn around? And because she suddenly had a change of heart. Sure. And maybe out of character. That actually what bugged me was how out of character she suddenly got. She's been totally disdainful of her own daughter this whole time, and now she suddenly had a change of heart. But will she now turn against Melisandre and Stannis?
And she's been a religious fanatic all along. I mean, almost yes. more Catholic than the Pope in her, so to speak, in her behavior. More of a true believer than Stannis has been. So you're right. Interesting to see her have that reaction as opposed to him.
And remember how we first met Stannis in season 2. Do you guys remember?
Remind me.
They were burning bodies, his own nephew, for the Red God.
Yeah.
On the beach. I mean, they were burning the seven and they burned his nephew.
This is nothing new for sure. This is nothing new.
Now let me clarify and make this very, very clear for our listeners and everybody else. I think what happened was abhorrent. I think it was terrible. But as far as I don't feel it was necessarily out of scope for this show. It's not like they took this major left turn and suddenly did something horrible in a show that's always been about puppies and dandelions. You know, it's been a horrible season for these kinds of things, to be sure. But it has again, this one sort of thing is kind of overwhelming the discussion of so many other parts of this episode. So why don't we go ahead and dig into some of those other parts of the episode?
Well, so I'm the one who said it. So I'm the one who said it. So let me explain myself a little bit before.
Oh, no. You're not the only one saying this. I've been reading it all over the place. People are incensed again. Not as much as a few episodes back, but it's definitely caused some rancor amongst a lot of people. And I think there are a lot of people fleeing from the show, or at least claiming they are fleeing from the show again.
So
start with Shireen then. And yeah, David, you go ahead and start it off.
Yeah, what rubbed me the wrong way about it was, it's not a departure for Stannis necessarily. There's foreshadowing and as a plot point, you can argue that it is a plot point that moves things forward. But I think the way in which this was done, there is a question of degree. Sure, there are a lot of well-known and/or beloved characters that have met untimely ends in this show, but few were as sort of innocent and uninvolved as Shireen was. She wasn't one of the combatants, so there is that fact which makes it a little more brutal. And a child, of course, but I think to add to that, the writers, the showrunners, they really went out of their way to create tenderness between her and Stannis, as well as between her and Ser Davos, which is more what goes on in the book.
More so, yeah.
Than the tenderness between her and Stannis. I think that increased the impact in a way that just didn't need to be done. And this isn't a novel. It's not the same medium. It's not the same audience. This has become a very wide, mass market, wide audience program. And to have something that is presented that graphically and was that offensive, I didn't feel was necessary. And I kind of felt it was a little similar about it to the way I felt about the rape of Sansa. I didn't find it entertaining. I just found it depressing.
No, fair enough.
And I know many people felt that way, and many people I'm sure didn't. So that states just one side of the equation.
Okay. I think a particular detachment myself personally when I'm watching a TV show and keeping it in context of a show and not, you know, I don't know. I even think about The Walking Dead, how many, you know, the first scene in The Walking Dead is basically a little girl being shot in the face. Maybe I've become horribly desensitized when it comes to my media or these kinds of things, but it's to me, it seemed that, as you just said, well, it's not out of the realm of Stannis. He's never been known for being a nice guy. He's not necessarily warm and cuddly. And we all joked about how awkward and horrible that hug was that he gave his own daughter, you know.
But they went out of their way to create some tenderness there and some feeling on his part that really that was almost out of character. And that's what made this scene so difficult.
Oh, I think they were going for maximum kick in the gut effect. You know, I think that's what they were going for. And I think they achieved that. You know, I think they absolutely achieved it because now we cannot root for Stannis. Mm-hmm. You know, you wanted to root for him to a certain degree before, especially when he got pedantic. Yeah, we all got behind his him being pedantic. But, you know, this was a bridge too far for sure. And it was pretty damn gross. Let's go ahead and get into our top fives. What do you say?
Yeah.
David, why don't you go ahead and kick it off?
I thought that was our top five.
No, God, that's not. And I'll get this right out of the way. That scene is not on my top five. I figured we'd be talking about it.
It's on mine, but I mean, it's a highlight because you have to talk about it. It's not something I enjoyed watching, but yeah, I talked about other aspects too. But okay, go ahead, David.
So on more cheerful killings.
more cheerful
killings. I'm going to make my number five, Jorah. Not only his battle in the pit, which I enjoyed, but I've always enjoyed him and his character. I'm glad he's back in the mix. And when he picked up the spear, threw it, you think for a second, Daenerys, and actually it ends up going through a Son of the Harpy behind her, which was a great surprise at that moment. I just loved it. And a great little piece of action, skillfully done, and happy to have one of my favorite champions back in the mix.
For sure. And, you know, I gotta hand it to Emilia Clarke. As she was watching Jorah go through that whole fight, you could see her just wincing. You know, she may be pissed, but I don't think she really wanted to see him die like that. Or you know, she has a problem watching anybody die.
Of course.
Die.
I mean, she still has feelings.
Absolutely. So I thought she did an amazing job conveying that very non-verbally. She did a great job. And Jorah, I can never remember. Is it? That's not Ian Glenn, is it? I can't remember the actor's name. Right? It is Ian Glenn.
Well,
he just killed it as well. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I loved that entire scene. And especially when you thought Jorah was about ready to get beat toast. Then the other guy kills him thinking, no, I'll kill the stronger guy first while his back is turned. Then I could take the weaker guy who's already on his back. He figured that would be an easy kill. So, but yeah, that spear going, I'm like, what the hell is he doing? I didn't understand what was happening at first. And then you find out. And then
I'm not a huge Jorah fan, but that spear was, I never thought it was going for Dany, but I thought, you know, maybe
Hisdar.
That it might have been going for Dario or Hisdar. And, you know, that. So I liked being surprised and talk about superb acting. I thought everyone up there was doing some wonderful, wonderful acting during that whole thing. And I kind of touch on that in another one of mine.
Yeah, and without even getting into the later battle, which I'm sure we'll also talk about.
Yeah,
the battle that followed, just in the fight in the fighting in the pits, the competition, great mix of styles. I love it when they mix up the styles. It's like when the Viper was fighting the Mountain, and one is fighting with speed and the spear, and the other is sort of the Westerosi style of the armor and the heavy sword. we had that at when the Khalasar was falling apart, and she said, sir, I think you'd better wear your armor tonight. And he had the great battle with the Dothraki, who fighting in two different styles. So that was an enjoyable part of that scene, too.
Well, and the way they've got Dario and Hisdar basically talking about who they're going to bet on. Do you bet on the quick or do you bet on that whole scene, this whole pissing contest between the two of them, and really Tyrion being involved as well, because they keep kind of, you know, making fun of the smaller person. But Dario saying, I always bet on the smaller, quick person.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, that always happens to you when you're at the game. You turn your head for a second and you totally miss the guy getting his head sliced off.
I know. When I go to a game, that's exactly what happens. But
I loved Dario's boasting. I thought that was just so hilarious. And Dani looked like she was so hot for him.
Oh, hell yeah. No.
And just her hatred for his Dar was just palpable. And that was just such a fun, it was such a serious scene. And it was such a fun add in there. But natural. It seemed kind of natural that he would be jealous. So he's in there boasting about his days in the fighting pit and all that.
Yeah.
Acting all manly man.
Yeah. What did he say? He's like, have you ever actually been in a real fight? You know, he's like, that was so great. I had just a, you know, what a wonderful palate cleanser from the first half of the episode to have this whole scene. And it is so great to see Tyrion somewhat in his element with at least some, you know, wisecracking, boastful dudes. I felt like, no, you're in the right spot right here. This is, I wanted to see him kind of rip them a new one. Like, none of you guys know what you're talking about. I killed my dad, you know.
But well, I do have to throw in there that I did feel a little compassion for his Dar. I was like, I don't know if he deserves all that, but
at the time, I don't know. I mean, you know, it was, well, it was also interesting the way he showed up and what he said. You know, he had some business to attend to or whatever it was. So I still have my questions about what that was all about.
Yeah, he's such a sleazy snake. It's hard to feel too bad for the guy.
And I really don't, quite frankly. So
I don't know. See, I separate him from his Dar, so I don't think he's quite very, I don't think he's very slimy.
Well, I don't trust him in the show. I'm not even thinking about Book His Dar. We'll save any of that talk for Book Talk, but it's even
well,
in the
I trusted
show,
him a lot more after he was stabbed multiple times.
Fair enough. a little late on that one.
That is funny. It's like, oh, hey, maybe that guy was okay after all.
Or they just were they were just at such bloodlust. They might not have even know who he was. You know, oh, shit, we just killed the wrong guy. Who knows? Grace, what is your number five?
Okay, my number five is just the use of fire throughout the episode. Maybe I'm getting on a bad one here, but you know, and I think one of you guys mentioned Ice and Fire in the last episode, but I just couldn't help mentioning it again. You know, Melisandre peering into the flames and Stannis' camp going up in flames and the horse running out and, of course, Shireen's death by fire. And even Melisandre's prayer to the Lord of Light was just full of, you know, fire references, of course. And, you know, then Drogon torching the Sons of the Harpy. And, you know, and I thought that was such a it was such a great contrast, really, with the fire with Drogon compared to Shireen, because, you know, here's someone's burning to death and you're just horrified. And then Drogon's burning people and you're cheering. I mean, my husband's like, burn them, burn them, you know, and it's just, you know, a little matter of reference there. But anyway, you know, it's just such a terrifyingly beautiful visual, and I think they just really drove home in the past couple episodes how deadly both ice and fire can be. So that was kind of just a cool one for me.
Great shot at the very beginning of this episode where it's a wide shot high far away from the camp, and you see some of the areas start to go up in flame, and it's not really like clear what's happening. It almost seems like it's somebody having a dream or a vision. And that was really cleverly done, I thought.
I don't think I've ever seen a horse on fire. That was, I was like, whoa, that's an image. You know, that was quite an image to see. And the Drogon stuff. I mean, again, I'm sure I loved all of that. I just thought it was just fantastic. And you're right. I'm sitting there cheering as well. I got so utterly excited. And what I get a kick out of, you know, last week, I felt like we had this, like, my God, we've been waiting for the White Walkers since, you know, first scene of the first episode of the first season. And we have been waiting for these dragons to do something since the last scene of the 10th episode of the first season, you know?
Yes.
So much of what we saw in that first season and then, you know, even into the second.
We're getting some payout.
And even the stuff with Stannis and Melisandre and all of this, there's this payout now, whether it's good or bad, happening at this point. So there's been a really fascinating through line that is really tying this entire series together. Some good, some horrific, but really, really well done. Do you have anything more on that, Grace?
Nope, that's good. Okay.
My number five. Although everything in Dorne, for the most part of this season, sucks ass, I really enjoyed finally seeing Duran show some of his backbone, show why he is the prince and why he is the leader in Dorne. Basically telling Ilaria, no, shut the fuck up. This is what we're going to do. But more than any of that, what I really enjoyed was the deal they made with Bronn. And the fact that, you know, Hammurabi's code takes over. It's an eye for an eye. You know, he gave this kid a flea bite. Here, have a couple teeth knocked out for your time. I thought that was just kind of funny. I enjoyed it. This episode had a few moments of levity. That was one of them. Mace Tyrell basically,
oh my goodness, you know, singing,
doing his own little act there on the docks was fantastic. So we had a few moments of levity in what is otherwise a very heavy sort of episode. But Duran, I was happy to see him come to life a bit, as it were, and at least make some sort of decision that I liked. So that's my number five. Pretty straightforward.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that because, you know, you are right. But, you know, I feel like anything is just a little too late with Dorne. And so I feel like I'm just ignoring the whole Dorne plot because I don't care for it. And so I didn't even take that into account when I was thinking about, you know, how I felt overall about the episode because I kind of put Dorne out of my mind. But I do agree with your assessment there on Duran. It was nice to see a bit more from him and that, you know, he's a level-headed guy that you can get behind.
And just because a situation is problematic does not mean that it can't be rectified. I mean, last week I talked about the intense lack of character development with anybody there. And I wanted to see more out of Duran. So, you know, for me, this is specifically what I was kind of hoping for. And this is the way you do start developing some character development. We do need to spend some time there. We just really didn't this season. And what time we did spend was squandered, you know. So I was happy to see this. I mean, Ilaria, you know, her terrible accent, her ridiculous behavior, the fact that when she's talking to Jaime, the accent seems to disappear. There was, you know, I kind of enjoyed that conversation between the two of them as well, although I found it to be, I don't know, fluff and kind of pointless, you know, but at least there's this acknowledgement of, look, let's just stop bullshitting. I know that's your daughter. You know, I know that you love your sister and we just love who we love. What the hell are you going to do? You know, at least somebody's openly talking about it, which I appreciate. So that's my number five. David, what's your number four?
As I still think of him, Dr. Bashir. Nice to see him develop some character. My number four is the, and you touched on it just briefly there, the Iron Bank of Braavos.
Yeah.
We didn't see too much of it. I'm sure we're going to see more, but I love those guys.
Gaddis, right?
Yes, Mark Gaddis is wonderful. The Mycroft Holmes from Sherlock.
Yep.
I like their building. I like their setup. I like the vague menace of their financial power. And Mace Tyrell is such a boob. And him trying to deal with those guys. Him trying to deal with those guys is just hilarious. The whole thing cracked me up. So
I liked again how they kind of mentioned gambling and they kind of makes a comparison between the bank loans and gambling. Just like last episode, they were comparing insurance to gambling. I just thought that was kind of a little neat tie-in.
You know, one thing I'm going to mention, since we talked about the insurance gambler guy, you know, one thing I don't think that came up last week, because when we were talking about it, somebody went in to see the route that guy was trying to show him, that where he was going to go. And that route took him straight through Valyria, which is probably why he was saying, I'm not going to do this. I'm not covering you on this.
Yeah.
He's had 18. I guess he said something like he had 18 successful missions, but he wanted to take this different route. And the thin man was saying, no, I'm not going to do that. He was trying to go through exactly where Jorah and Tyrion went through. So I thought that was a good catch on some very eagle-eyed watchers of the show. Who found that?
Yeah, well, kudos to the listener that picked that up.
Absolutely. Yeah, stone men dropping onto your boat is definitely a liability risk that an insurance company would think twice before taking on.
Fair enough. Agreed. Grace, what's your number four?
Yes. Okay, I might be flayed for this, but my number four is the parallel between Stannis' conversation with Shireen in this episode to the one earlier in the season. So, and maybe no one else can do this, but putting aside my anger at Stannis and Selyse and Melisandre for just a minute, I just thought this scene was, I thought it was beautiful and I thought it was worth mentioning. I found it to be touching, even though I was sick to my stomach at the thought of what was probably about to happen.
Sure.
Unlike David, I mean, I have to say that I do, after everything happened, I did feel a bit manipulated, but I don't know. I just love the conversation between them and how the words Shireen used kind of mirrored those that Stannis had said to her just that short time ago. You know, I'm the Princess Shireen of House Baratheon and I am your daughter. You know, and I love the story that she told him about, you know, how much destruction choosing sides can cause. And, you know, his response was equally beautiful. And, you know, of course, really hits home. You just know what he's going to do at this point. But, you know,
go ahead. What made that so horrible is that she essentially volunteered for this.
Yeah.
Well, without knowing what it really meant. You know,
the innocence. That was yes. Yeah. You know, as a child, she's so innocent and pure and you know, like David said, one of the last innocent, pure people around, really. And, you know, people say, or Melisandre has been saying that, you know, he's Azor Ahai. Is that how you pronounce his name? Reborn. But I thought it was interesting how the sacrifice that he made didn't really differ all that much from the one Azor Ahai had made when he was forging his sword, Lightbringer. I went and read about it. And, you know, he goes and he forges the sword three times before he realized that in order to temper it without the sword shattering, he had to sacrifice his wife. I mean, basically, he plunged it into her heart. You know, and this man is a hero of legends. And, you know, Melisandre has convinced Stannis that he's the one to fulfill that prophecy. And, you know, I should have really been less surprised and shocked that he went through with burning his only child at the stake. You know, I don't know.
Well, I'm
back to hating him now, but I just loved the scene at the time. It was powerful. I think the actors did a wonderful, wonderful job of displaying emotion. It was very well done.
Well, I mentioned earlier the Trojan War and Agamemnon and what he did. You know, two of the world's major religions, Judaism and Islam, are both founded on different interpretations of the same event. And that would be Abraham and his son?
Abraham and Isaac.
Abraham and Isaac, or Abraham and Ishmael, depending on whether it's the issue between the two is that in Judaism, Abraham kind of tricked Isaac to go up there to sacrifice his own son, and then God said, you don't have to. In Islam, Ishmael knew that he was going to be sacrificed and went willingly to be sacrificed. And both outcomes were the same, that God said, whoa, no, 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 you don't have to do that. You've proven yourself. This is not a new concept, you know, at all, the idea of child sacrifice. Sure. And we can be incensed about it. But the thing is that, like you just said, you shouldn't have been surprised. This was being telegraphed all season long. Doesn't make it any easier, but at the same time, it's a story.
And, you know, and I said that I felt a bit manipulated that, you know, a few episodes ago, you know, Stannis was showing his love, whether it was in and out or out of character, you know, I don't really know. But would it have been a meaningful sacrifice if he just had only shown coldness to her always? You know, it wouldn't have really been a sacrifice on his part had he, you know, not cared for her.
Yeah, I
hated her.
Saying,
that's not a sacrifice. And I think that's what they wanted to show, is that it was a sacrifice. And
sure.
A terrible, terrible sacrifice. You know, I have three daughters. I mean.
Agreed. All right. My number four Again, pulling it away from the subject. Jesus Christ. Arya stalking Meryn Trant. I love this whole thing. I love that she gets distracted. You know, she's about ready to take care of the thin man. And then she looks over and sees him. And this whole thing, you know, and I'm wondering the whole time, did he recognize her? Because he might recognize her, you know. But now we find out, oh, they went one, you know, here's another thing to be incensed about, people. They went one step further from Sir Meryn Trant, the man who killed Cyrio Forel, the man who beat Sansa on Joffrey's request, now is an even worse pedophile.
So, yeah, see, now that was the one thing this episode that I really felt was unnecessary, actually.
I don't think we needed to go there either. I think he was already bad enough and it could have just been for her revenge. I think they set this up so that.
In case you didn't remember? Or
no, not just in case you didn't remember, but he even tells the brothel keeper, a madam or whatever you want to call her, I want a fresh one tomorrow. Well, you know who's going to pretend to be a fresh one for the next day. Sure. So expect some more outrage next week when Arya pretends to be a prostitute and Meryn gets his grubby little hands all over her. It's going to be horrible. But of course, hopefully there will be sweet, sweet immediate retribution and revenge. That is something I can simply hope for on that because, what a gross dude in every sense of the word.
Agreed.
But I really enjoyed this development now with Arya. I am very curious when she lied to Jaqen, did he know that she was lying or not? How good has she gotten at this?
I do not know. It was kind of unclear.
I don't know. David, what's your number three?
So that actually is my number three.
I'm sorry.
Pretty much any episode in which the man formerly known as Jaqen H'ghar shows up, he's going to be one of my top five. Just because I love that character and I love the actor. And I spent about a half hour after the show trying to figure out, did he know in that 10 seconds that we saw them together what was going on and what it kind of feels like he's orchestrating this whole thing. On behalf of the many-faced god. So did he know that was going to happen? Did he not know it was going to happen? What's he up to? What's his purpose? And I just love that guy.
So part of you thinks he might be testing her?
Oh, hell yeah.
Or setting her up for this other killing, and the thin man was misdirection. And remember the other girl who said she's not ready, and he said, oh, it's all the same to the many-faced god. So maybe she's just not ready and she's blowing it, but it's a lot of complexity built into that little 10-second scene.
Well, certainly, and this is certainly her failing this test of letting go of Arya Stark, letting go of her revenges, to say the least, you know. So it is this interesting little game that's going on, and I'm really curious how this is going to play out. Yeah. Great stuff. Very good. All right, well then, Grace, what is your number three?
Okay, my number three is the tension with Ollie and the other men of the Night's Watch.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, while I thought the malicious stares from the, you know, Lord Commander Snow's brothers were kind of disquieting, I mean, the look that Ollie gave him just chilled me to the bone. It's especially a
pissed off looking little kid, man.
Yeah, you know, John's smiling at him and he just gives him that look. And, you know, especially after Sam's recent chat with Ollie, the reaction that John has been getting doesn't bode well for the future, to say the least. But I just have to say that just the stares that he's getting, but especially Ollie, loved it.
Yeah, that was great. And, you know, actually that ties in perfectly with my number three, which was John's return to Castle Black. I love that entire thing. You know, the view that Sir Alistair had from atop the wall, looking down on John with all the wildlings, watching Warwon Wegdar One strolling into Castle Black and everybody looking at him like, what the
fuck? How awesome was that?
Oh, it was great. And even, I mean, I like the fact that Ed, John, and Sam were even still doing this. Like, look, Ed and John, you guys have just spent days with him. Why are you guys looking at him all surprised? I guess it's just a weird thing to see a giant strolling inside through Castle Black. Yes, yes. And that line that Sir Alistair says to him, you've got a big heart, Jon Snow. It's going to get us all killed. You know, great. That's about as warm and cuddly as I've ever seen Sir Alistair Thorne towards Jon Snow. That is a backhanded compliment if I've ever heard one.
Well, and I like John's reaction when he finally opened the gate. He was just so relieved because he was sweating bullets there for a second.
Oh, hell yeah, of course. I mean, think of they would have strung him alive if they would have just ripped him apart if they didn't open the door. You lied to us, you know.
Oh, my God.
Well, and let alone them being upset. I mean, they're screwed if they don't get through that gate. We all know what's coming. And,
exactly.
They don't have food. They don't have protection. If they didn't get through, that would have been a death sentence for them.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep. And it's just, everybody in Castle Black, everybody behind the wall still has no idea what's really coming for them. I love that, that this is that thing that just keeps getting played out longer and longer and longer is, man, this is the real threat. We have finally seen what the real threat is. And they're all still oblivious, which is just great. I love it. Makes for great tension, great drama. David, bring us some more drama. What's your number two?
Well, in dramatic fashion, my number two is what didn't happen.
Ooh, I don't get it. Explain.
This is a very rare episode of Game of Thrones in which we really don't visit King's Landing at all.
Yeah.
And,
oh, I know
what you mean. King's Landing has become a sad place. What with the poor young monarch in his room alone, not taking his food, not speaking to anyone, and his mother and wife and brother-in-law all in a sad state. It's a compelling storyline, but it's a little wearisome as well. So there was so much else of interest going on, I was sort of glad we never went to King's Landing.
All right. Fair enough. I have a feeling we're going to get a nice big heaping dose of King's Landing next week.
Yes, without a doubt. I think so.
Without a doubt. I'm looking forward to that. Grace, what's your number two?
My number two is Drogon in the Fighting Pit, though maybe a different little spin than what you guys might want to talk about. You know, and although I know it was obvious that Drogon was going to save the day, even to non-book readers, you know, I have to say that I was delighted to still be surprised by a couple of events. And I enjoyed the look of Daznak's pit and Drogon immensely. I mean, the structure just amazed me, and the number of people in the scene. And I'm totally unsure of how much was CGI and how much was like a real structure, but I just thought it looked amazing. And I was also super impressed with Drogon. You know, I really felt he felt like a real dragon, and I loved seeing him walking on like in his little wing like hands.
Yeah,
he just looks so realistic, like a real animal. And when he opened his mouth and screamed at Danny, I mean, holy fuck! I mean, that just seems so real to me. You know, after the bear scene with Brienne, I was a little worried about this one with Drogon. You know, because I knew it was coming, but I thought all in all, it looked wonderful. Not perfect, but so much better than I even dreamed we'd get. Even after last week's battle, I was still kind of worried about it. But, you know, while I don't care too much about Jorah's redemption, sorry, David, but I did thoroughly enjoy that whole back and forth like we were talking about earlier with Tyrion, Hisdar, and Daario and Dany. I mean, that just, for me, made the scene. Though I did enjoy the fighting too, the Jorah's fighting and all that too.
Yeah, I have to say, I love the Drogon scene. It was great. This is not a complaint, but I thought the dragon would be bigger by this time.
Oh, God, that was pretty damn big.
It was pretty big, but I mean, he's been away eating like villages and small children and cows
little children and
goats
and
yeah, and soaring over the landscape. And the reason I say that is if you go back into the legends of the old dragons of the Targaryens and beyond that, and if you go forward to what we all sort of hope is going to happen, which is dragons are going to play a big role in this battle with the Night's King and the undead, as fearsome as Drogon was, it's going to take a lot more than that. I mean, he was not of the size that cities. So he's still a growing dragon.
He's a long way to go. He's still a juvenile, I think. I think he's still very young.
Yeah.
They can't make him that big yet, because then if he does fly over King's Landing, then it wouldn't be as impressive if we're already used to that.
I think I know exactly how big he was for this scene, though, which was big enough.
Yes.
You know, he fit very nicely into the fighting pit. He did a good job of getting some good 360 degree rotisserie action. Actually, I love the scenes when he would just chomp down on somebody and flail them about. As somebody who's always enjoyed monster movies, I love seeing a monster on a rampage. And there's something about the way, you know, I see my own dire wolf here at home when he gets his little Chewbacca chew toy. He thrashes it around just like Drogon thrashed around one of those sons of the Harpy. It made me think of him. And I'm like, wow, I'm glad he's not dragon-sized.
Yeah, and Karen and I watched Jurassic Park over the weekend.
So did I.
Which, right, which is was played on TV in preparation of Jurassic World coming out, which is, by the way, exactly the same movie, just with more people.
We don't know yet. We bigger haven't special seen effects. It yet. It comes out but, next week.
But if you remember, the T-Rex did the same thing. It would chew up its prey and shake it around like a rag doll. So that the Drogon reminded me of the T-Rex.
Well, and I used to keep a lot of reptiles, and one of my pets was Max. He was my Asian water monitor, and I bought him as a teeny infant. And by the time I eventually had to sell the majority of my collection when I moved to Hawaii because they were just not allowed. Max was about 5 feet by the time I had to get rid of him, and he was dragon-like, and I'd seen him do that same sort of motion with things that I'd feed him. I always fed him frozen things, but you know, nothing live, because I think he would have done that with a live thing. It would have been, but I saw him do it with frozen, thawed-out critters. He would just shake him around, and I'm like, and I saw Drogon, and I'm like, oh, Max, you know. But thank God Max never had spear. And oh my God, what about Danny pulling the spears out?
Well, yeah, and this Drogon didn't even seem quite impervious to spears. So
no, he seemed very bothered by the spears.
So he's got quite a ways to go before he's going to be melting Harrenhal and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he is not invincible by any stretch of the imagination. He's a pissed off teenager, petulant youth. But it was so fucking cool to see.
It was
payoff. I should say payoff. Finally,
yes.
Was that your number two?
It was my number two.
It was yours. Okay, so we're on to me here. My number two is actually something we already talked about a bit. Was the scene between Davos and Shireen. This is the one aspect of the Shireen issue that I did include in my top five, because I felt that was the most honest scene. And you know, I love almost any scene with Davos. I think he is a fantastic actor. I think he's a great character. I think his love, you know, that whole thing about him learning to read and how he was being stubborn about it. I mean, just again, it just made what eventually happened that much worse. And yes, manipulative. But again, him giving that carving to her of the stag, I thought was just beautiful. She wanted a doe made out of it. But interestingly enough, the first thing that kind of popped into my head, again, going back to the first episode of the series, was finding that direwolf dead with the stag horn in it, you know, and there seems to be so much death surrounding the Baratheon name and sigil.
You think we're going to see that stag again at like the edge of the fire pit where she dropped it?
Oh, I don't know. I doubt
poor
it.
Poor Davos. You
know, maybe Davos
gonna be
will.
So, oh, my gosh.
Oh, he's going to be devastated. And, of course, my hope is that he's going to finally turn against Stannis.
I hope so.
You know, I can't see him really standing for this. I mean, it was, again, the projection of this coming the way Stannis sent Davos off. Because you know there is no way Davos would have – he would have found a way to get her off, get her out of there. I was so hoping he was going to be able to do so. And he's saying, look, let me take Shireen. He knew what was coming.
I think he knew. Melisandre or he was worried. But I think also Stannis was probably worried that he would have to kill them both.
Oh, certainly. I mean,
because
Melisandre
he knew Davos
been,
would object.
Melisandre's been licking her chops about King's Blood now for so long. And I mean, she even flat out said this a couple episodes back or a few episodes back. You know, we have somebody with King's Blood right here. Wink, wink, Shireen, you know. We all hoped Stannis would do the right thing and tell her to fuck off. But every victory he has had has been with Melisandre by his side. Every failure he has had has been when Melisandre was not there, you know? This is the man that unblinkingly assisted in the assassination of his own brother.
Sure.
You know, he's not a good guy. Never no. has been, you know.
But they made us like him.
Well, yeah. So that God makes you a horrible person because you like... No, I'm kidding. No, it doesn't. And it's you know, whereas one... David, whereas you see this as you know, unnecessary or just a bridge too far, I guess. Honestly, I see this as really effective storytelling. Because we're all kind of pissed off with ourselves that we actually got in Stannis' corner for a while. And he let us down. We're pissed because mm-hmm. Stannis Baratheon let us down. He did something so horrific that we are sitting here going, my God, you fucker, you made us believe in you. That, to me, honestly, is good storytelling. We're emotionally invested. If this was a bad story, none of us would be emotionally invested.
So here's a question. Why didn't they just bring Gendry along with them? Or is his king's blood not pure enough to make a difference?
Well, that's what I said.
Because Davos sent him off. Davos smuggled him out.
A couple weeks ago, I was like, well, why isn't a leech enough anymore? Well, probably you can't get him when it's like cold and frozen area, but you know.
I don't know.
Why can't they just leech her or draw a little blood?
Draw a little blood. I agree.
Throw it on the fire.
I don't understand why, but I don't know the ways of R'hllor.
He's a demanding god.
He is. Well, he's also the one god actually showing up and doing shit. But, you know, if it's a god that demands the sacrifice of your daughter, I say fuck that god.
I guess they couldn't go chasing off after Gendry. They had other things to do, and he was...
He's still rowing out there in the bay.
I understand, and he was able to get away.
Yeah, he'd be easy to find. He's going in circles.
Yeah. So that escape plan was questionable, but one has to wonder if he's going to come back into the story.
I hope so.
I hope so. Yeah. I like that actor too. I'd like to see him come back. Thought he was all right.
But do you have any counterpoints, David? I feel like we didn't give you your time.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about this when we get to news of Game of Thrones, and I feel like we've talked about it quite a bit already. So.
We have. Okay. David, what's your number one?
So my number one from this episode is the Sons of the Harpy. I thought it was awesome when they showed up. Yeah. It was a great extended battle scene, but not just the battle scene, just their whole presence. The way they went from sort of 0 to 60 or 0 to 600 of them in the blink of an eye.
Yeah,
and it was well the done. Way they look. The whole thing kind of reminded me. Whole thing kind of reminded me of Scream 2. The first scene in Scream 2, so just a little background. I went to see Scream 2 with a friend on Halloween, and I believe it was released on Halloween. So in the movie, a bunch of people in the audience in the film, they're all at a movie watching, you know, the horror movie. And so the people in the movie have the masks on and they're killing each other. And then all the people in the theater have the masks on. And then one of them ends up getting killed. And then I looked around, and because it was Halloween, everybody in the theater I was actually in had the masks on. That was really creepy.
That's like horrorception.
Yes. And that's kind of what these Sons of the Harpy were like.
Too surreal.
Yeah, they're just coming out of nowhere and they're very intimidating. And you know what they did to Cerberiston and to Grey Worm and to all this. And, you know, it ends up working out to a degree. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen to Missandei and Tyrion and Jorah and Dario after Daenerys flies away. So we don't know that it's all going to be okay. But they were a great menacing presence, and it was a great battle scene. I loved it.
You know, somebody pointed out, I was reading one of the reviews and recaps I was reading today, pointed out that Dario has suggested gathering up all of the masters and just killing them all in one spot as a show of something, you know, strength on Danny's part. It seems the Sons of the Harpy did just that.
This is a little hindsight is 2020.
Pretty much, because the Sons of the Harpy did exactly that, you know, and they thought that just reopening the fighting pits would quell the Sons of the Harpy.
Yeah.
I mean, and at this point, I keep questioning, like, well, what exactly are the Sons of the Harpy after at this point?
Oh, they,
I don't fully understand.
They want her dead, and they want and they want slavery back. I mean,
they just want their old ways back.
Yeah, I think it's pretty all clear. Right.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, they went from being on top to being nobody.
Yeah, and it was naive of Danny to think they're ever going away. They're never going away as long as she is in charge. And, you know, as Dario put it, every ruler is the butcher of the meat. And he was probably right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. What's your number one, Grace?
Mine was just the whole Shireen scene. Not because I loved it, but because I thought it was discussion worthy.
My God.
And it was.
Yes, so
what do you have?
Mine was Drogon's appearance and the subsequent flight. I just loved everything about it. I was excited to see Drogon show up. I was excited to see her climb on board and go for a ride. Some people, I got to laugh. People are complaining about, well, the CGI looked a little bad. Come on, it's a TV show, for fuck's sake. That's pretty damn good for a TV show. It does not have an unlimited budget, people. I thought it was
great. It looked amazing for a TV show.
Really, I loved it. I just... Everything about it, I really enjoyed. I loved the little tender moment between her and Drogon. And even I liked her tentativeness at approaching him, whether from the front or then as she's getting ready to ride him, you know, like, I don't know if this is going to work. And then I'm seeing all the spikes on his back and I'm like,
yeah,
man,
you gotta be careful.
It reminds me of the Iron Throne. You know, you got to be careful on that thing. It's sharp. It's spiky. Yeah. It's going to hurt you if you get on board that thing.
Well, and so
you get on board Drogon.
Yeah. So to go back to the Princess and the Queen, or the Blacks and the Greens, which is the name of the second George R. R. Martin novella that deals with this dance with dragons. That was a history of the rivalry between two factions of the Targaryens, and that's what Princess Shireen was talking about in the episode. But they go into some details about dragon riding and who is a dragon rider and who is not. And it's by no means assured that just because you grow up with dragons that you're going to be a dragon rider, that the dragon's going to take to you. Sure. So those old Targaryens, they were all gifted a dragon egg when they were young. And they would grow up with the egg and hope that it hatched. Not all of them did. And then you would hope you could bond with the dragon at a young age. But again, not all of them did. So it's quite a development that evidently Dany has that talent and they've bonded.
With at least Drogon. We don't know about the other two.
Correct.
Well, the other two may, you know, the dragon needs three heads.
Right. And so she can only ride one dragon at once into battle. So those other two dragons, if they're going to be deployed, are going to need riders. And generally speaking, it's a human stays with one dragon, or so is the Targaryen tradition.
Okay, very cool.
Groovy. So that wraps it up. Do you guys have any notes?
We touched on most of mine. Let me see what I have. We didn't touch on. Tyrion's expression as Dany flew away. I mean, that was one thing that really hit me. I love that.
Oh, that was great, wasn't it?
Watching that, I think he was thinking, I think he was like, yeah, I think I made the right decision to do back.
He had that look of, I'm converted. I am a believer. I get it now. You know, really had that. Yes. He did a great job.
Had the Jorah look.
Yeah. Of holy.
He also might have been thinking I'm about
and
to
also
get killed.
Danny's necklace. I just have to mention Danny's necklace. That was awesome.
Oh, I thought it was maybe a hair piece, but it was a necklace, wasn't it? Like the dragon wrapped around her.
It was awesome, yes.
The back of her neck was beautiful. I noticed that as well.
I also have to say that Tyrion might have been thinking, I'm about to die within the next 30 seconds.
Oh, sure. Sure.
I might as well have something beautiful as my last thing I see.
Yes. Memorable last sight.
Well, you guys ready to go ahead and kick into some Facebook responses?
Let's do it.
David, kick it off.
This comes from Alicia Stout. Fighting pits, pedophilia, fire, ice, lies, dragons, oh my. Anyone else predict the dragon coming into the pit to save the day? Duh. You think Ollie will kill Jon Snow next episode? Did you see that look he gave him? Yikes. Is Melisandre so full of light and fire she can't even put on a damn jacket? Hashtag cold-hearted bitch. Hashtag rip Shireen.
This is from Lindsay Schlicht. I felt bipolar during this episode. First bored, then heartbroken for Shireen, then tense for Dany, Jorah, and Drogon. By the end, when Dany flew away with Drogon, I was jacked up like a hillbilly who stumbled into daddy's meth lab. Nothing can top last week's episode, but this week sure came close. Best season so far.
Next one comes from Meg Mertz. For an episode 9, this one was rather weak, unlike last week's, which was action-packed. However, that said, I rather enjoyed seeing the faces of the Watch as 1-1 came through the gate. That was rather enjoyable. Stannis lost his damn mind and soul, it seems. Arya is headed for trouble. Drogon gets the win for the week, and Dany taking flight made my heart glad after Shireen's death.
Amen. Kay Deer posts, Stannis truly believes himself to be Azor Ahai reborn, thanks to the red bitch. She also convinced him that the entire realm would suffer if he did not do this terrible thing. It in no way excuses what he did, but in his mind, he was putting the needs of the realm over his own needs as a father and his daughter's right to live. He thought he was doing the Lord's work, much like the story of Abraham and Isaac.
Oh. Yeah.
I only hope he stays alive long enough to realize that he was wrong, that he is not Azor Ahai reborn, and that he condemned his daughter to a horrible, torturously painful death for nothing.
I seriously hope he is not Azor Ahai reborn, because none of us will be on board that train, that's for sure. Okay, this next one is from Marcy Brinker. I've been waiting for Arya and Meryn Trent to meet up in Braavos since he was sent with Mace Tyrell. I think Arya will be crossing another name off her list next week. I wonder if he thought he knew Arya from somewhere, or if he was just in his preferred age range, and that's why he noticed her. Ew.
Ew, indeed.
That was one hell of a Drogon ex machina at the end.
Well played,
Marcy.
The
whole sequence was pretty great. Jorah's battle, saving Dany in the nick of time, then all-out riding, followed by a Sons of the Harpy barbecue. I hope he toasted enough of them for Dany's crew to escape safely.
Let's have a toast to the Sons of the Harpy.
Heather Hildebrand says, I thought Dany flying away on Drogon was a little too Falcor for my tastes.
Good point.
Sorry, what's Falcor?
You'll have an opportunity to look that up later.
Okay, all right. I don't know what that is.
Adam Dunmoyer says, wow, emotional roller coaster tonight. Gonna need some Podcastica Prozaxtica after that Bipolar Express. I love that movie, Robin the Bipolar Young. Express.
Oh, Neverending Story.
That's the 40s story. Version of the same story.
That's who Falcor is. Neverending Story. Okay, you know what? I got it. All right, sorry.
Robin Young Sanders says, The Walking Dead gave us Porch Dick. My new name for Stannis is Torch Dick.
That's good.
Very
That's
nice.
Good. Okay, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we'll have some news about Game of Thrones. I thought love was only true in fairy tales, and for someone else, but not for me. Our love was out to get me. That's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer. Okay, we're back, and it's time for news about Game of Thrones. David, why don't you go ahead and take it away?
So much of our news of Game of Thrones this week has to do with the controversial scene to which we have referred many times already in our podcast here. I'm going to read bits of a couple of articles about this, and of course there were all kinds of postings on social media as well. But in one of these articles, we hear from the showrunners, and in another, we hear from Liam Cunningham, who's the wonderful actor who plays Ser Davos. So Game of Thrones showrunner Dan Weiss spoke to EW online about the Princess Shireen sequence and how it ties to the show's exploration of fanaticism. horrible things happening to people in this show. And this is one we thought was entirely narratively justified, Weiss said. It was set up by the predicament that Stannis was in. It will be awful to see, but it's supposed to be awful. Interviewer says, when I asked Weiss the question that fans surely have tonight, how could you do that to Shireen? Weiss philosophically noted that you could flip that question into a larger debate about how we're all highly selective about which characters deserve our empathy. Stannis has been burning people alive for seemingly trivial reasons since season two, yet we've still tended to regard him as a great leader, at least by Westeros standings, or by standards. Fellow showrunner David Benioff added that Song of Ice and Fire author George R. R. Martin told producers about this twist, suggesting that Shireen's death will happen in an upcoming book. So, possible book spoiler there. But
yeah.
So I'm going to react to that a little bit, just to say that I think the showrunners make some good points about narrative justification. I think they also sound a little defensive about it, to be honest. And I don't quite buy the idea that he's been burning people at the stake for no reason. I think for the most part, he was the people that got burned at the stake tended to be people that either were supposedly loyal to him that weren't on board with the program or that were resisting the direction that things were going. And in my opinion, even though Shireen says to Melisandre she still believes in the Seven, I think that's a little bit of a stretch.
You know, I mean, he also, don't forget, Melisandre also burned and with Stannis' approval, Mance Rayder this season.
Yes, but Mance Rayder was an outlaw king, head of a rebel army, who would not bend the knee to Stannis. So, I mean, that's as much political as it is anything else.
Sure, and his nephew in season two, who just would not go. I mean, if anything, this really, you know, he brings this up about fanaticism. You know, and I think this is what we are meant to see. You know, religious fanaticism leads to this kind of shit.
Yes,
all sides are guilty of this in one way or another.
Yes, so regardless,
and I don't think any of those other deaths were a sacrifice for him. I think this was the only one that really meant something to Stannis.
Probably. Sure.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, you know, I won't belabor the point about my opinion and the way this was led up to, or the style in which it was done, and the effect on the audience. But in any case, that's what the showrunners had to say about it. And here's what Liam Cunningham has to say about it. In Sunday's episode, the Onionite was sent away by Stannis before the would-be king did the unthinkable. Liam Cunningham, the man who plays Ser Davos, has known for roughly a year that the character would be sacrificed to the Lord of Light, and he's still not thrilled about it. It did hurt. I love working with Carrie, he said, of Carrie Ingram, the actress who plays Shireen. So it's an awful loss, both professionally and personally. He says he found out last year when they sent him the scripts. I read them through and saw that this delightful young lady was going to be burned. I was astonished. Well, listen, nothing astonishes me on this show, to be honest with you, but it hit very close to home. This is from an article in the New York Times, by the way, to give credit where credit's due. He says, the scenes we had together have been described as being incredibly sweet, which is not a word that you normally use with Game of Thrones. These sweet moments in the middle of this incredible story of legacy, power, and paranoia, to have that removed is difficult. It's tricky, and I shall miss her enormously. And the interviewer asks, was that tenderness laid out in the scripts, or did it come from a natural chemistry between you two? Liam Cunningham says, if it's not on the page, it's not going to be on the screen. As an actor, you can't do the silk purse from a sow's ear. What Carrie brings to it is beautiful honesty in her portrayal. There's no performing. She just is, and that's the best kind of acting. There's an old actor saying about how you don't work with children or animals. I disagree with both of them. Some of the best times I've ever had were working with kids because there's an honesty to them. So I thought that was a very interesting take just on the craft and the acting. And Liam Cunningham, by the way, came later in life to acting from a blue-collar career, and which is pretty amazing because he's so amazing, such a natural, so great in that role.
Yeah. And so is the actress that played Shireen. I mean, she did a wonderful job. And, you know, actually, I think I'm more choked up after you reading that than the actual scene, because that's real life. And it's kind of like The Walking Dead, the actors, when one of them dies, it affects the cast, because that's a friend that they've lost.
But just for the record, I feel the need to just say this. The actress, Carrie Ingram, is still alive, much the way all of the Walking Dead actors, when they die, are still alive.
Of course she is.
These are characters. I'm just trying to make this point here. These are characters in a story. He's sad to see her go because professionally and personally, he liked working with her. You know, and I get that. But this, you know, I'm sure everybody really liked working with Sean Bean too. It seems like he might be a nice guy, but they lopped off his head. You know, there have been so many deaths in this series. Of all genders, of all ages, of all creeds, and all races. There's death, death, death. And I love that he does at least say, nothing astonishes me on this show, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. This is a brutal, unblinking, kick in the gut and or balls, depending on which is going to hurt you more, sort of a show. And I don't know. I guess at this point, I'm not surprised at some of these things anymore. And this is, you know, as we've mentioned before, this is off book. This is out of the book at this point. This is a book spoiler for us as well. Yes, it's shocking. Yes, it's horrible and these kinds of things. But I my capacity for outrage is very limited on this show, for sure.
Well, I don't think Liam Cunningham was expressing outrage about what was written into the script. He was just...
No. I'm talking about so many other things out there.
He was just expressing sadness about... not getting and to continue enough, that on-screen relationship and professional relationship that he
absolutely enjoyed. And they were lovely together. They were so lovely together, and it's a loss for the show.
So I have one more news item that's on a much lighter note, and I felt like this was the time to mention this, although it's been going on all season. So a lot of excitement in our area out here in the Bay Area about the Golden State Warriors, who are in the NBA Finals as we speak. And one of the star Warrior players, a young man named Harrison Barnes, is quite the nerdy Game of Thrones fanboy. So he's actually created his own House Sigil, which is the House of the Black Falcon, which is his nickname on the basketball court. So he's put that out there, and he's been tweeting about the show. So earlier in the season, Harrison Barnes had a watch party for Game of Thrones, and he threw it out there to the fans. You can come meet me, watch the show with me. But he didn't just invite people. He made them answer a 40-question quiz. and I have a friend That's who is awesome. one of the 40 winners of this contest, so he got to go to this thing. It was a lot of fun, and he got 37 right out of 40, and that was the lowest total of anyone that was admitted. So you can imagine the geek factor that was present at this thing. I don't think I would have made the cut, but so I'm rooting for the House of the Black Falcon in the NBA Finals.
Go Warriors. Cool. Right on. Okay, so that's all for the news?
That's all for the news.
Let's move on to Raven's calls. Okay, our first letter comes from James. Fuckity fuck fuck, man. Not Shireen. Fuck. That was cold, Stannis. That was fucking cold. To quote a group of poets from the late 20th century, quit playing games with my heart. Henceforth, Stannis is no longer the Mannis. A round of applause for the girl who plays Shireen. Her screams were chilling.
Yes, they were.
I was about to be like Karen and lie by saying I'm done with this show. And then the shot changed to the fighting pits. And everything changed. I have been waiting for this scene ever since I read the books 2 years ago. I was just as surprised as Hisdar was when he got stabbed by the Sons of the Harpy. I thought he was the damn Harpy, and that perhaps Dario would kill him. Guess not. And then... Dragon! Although I don't know if he meant to say Drogon. But maybe Dragon. I don't know. All of Dany's fears, doubts, and insecurities melted away the instant she saw Drogon land. I'm on the edge of my seat to see what's next for her, but I have a feeling we won't see her until season 6. Sincerely, James in Portland. Thanks, James.
Great one, James. Drea Age, one of our regular contributors, writes, haiku review for you. Jorah's Redemption, Khaleesi and Drogon Fly, A Mother's Regret. That pretty much sums it up. Great haiku. So much happened that made me cheer. Jorah's Redemption and Back Where He Belongs by Khaleesi's side, although not for very long. Khaleesi and Drogon take flight, which was awesome. Drogon barbecues a bunch of mask-wearing assholes, but gets a couple of spades chucked at him in the process. I wonder, though, is he actually being seriously hurt, or are these more like annoying gnats? Can the dragons die easily? Are they really tough? We haven't seen them do too much battle, and I fear for their safety. My feeling is Drogon is fine, and he and his siblings are ready to open a can of whoop-ass on some whites. And I think that goes back to our discussion of whether he's full-grown or not, and he isn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
While there was much to celebrate, there were some real down points. The screams of poor little Shireen screams were certainly enough to induce nightmares for weeks. It's true. Any sympathy or cool points granted to Stannis for his behavior at the wall and loaning the ships to Snow are completely gone. What a stupendous tool bag that Stannis is, and I hope he suffers a terrible demise. How will Davos handle this? So many questions. Only one precious episode left. Can't wait to hear the podcast. Pull the fucking gates open, you guys, because winter is coming.
Our next one is from Laura Willie Swink. Loved it. Drogon flying in action hero style to save his mother. I really wanted to hear Flight of the Valkyries as he swooped into the arena. Though it was awesome, I wasn't sure why Dany flew off with Drogon, leaving everyone else to the Sons of the Harpies. But my theory was that Drogon refused to leave her side despite the fact that he was being attacked. So Daenerys flew off with him in order to save him. Also, despite the fact that he was stabbed in the gut, I still think Hisdar was the lead conspirator in this coup, especially after telling Dany he was making sure everything was in place. I think he became the collateral damage of his own ill-fated plot. Hated it. Damn you, Stannis! In two episodes, you went from Father of the Year to lowest of the low dirtbags on my shit list. You and the Boltons deserve to kill each other off. I hope this action was enough to end Ser Davos' blind dedication to Stannis forever. He knew that something shady was going down, and he obeyed Stannis all the same. Poor, sweet Shireen, another innocent victim to the game. Crazy theory. So Ser Jorah touched Dany. I noticed it was not with his infected arm, but are we to assume that Jorah knows that he won't infect her that way? And what if he did? As we know, Daenerys is immune to dragonfire. Might she be immune to dragon scale as well? I haven't read the books yet, but my wild theory is, if she did get dragon scale, how cool would it be if she were to grow a complete body of armored stone, hard dragon scale as she rode astride Drogon. Now that would truly make her dragon queen.
Well, they also get like completely mindless. Well, they also get completely mindless and crazed. Yeah, I don't think that's something you really want for.
But if she has a little bit of immunity to it, you know, and it's just only armor.
That's a great point, though. I didn't notice that, I have to admit, but I missed that happening, so that's a great detail to point out.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, our last letter comes from Lloyd Green. Lloyd, how you doing? Grace, of course, you and I know who he is. He's a regular contributor to Under the Comic Covers, so thank you so much for writing in, Lloyd. Lloyd says, I really wanted to comment on this week's episode. But after the cold-hearted nonsense with Princess Shireen, I've got nothing except a big fuck you to Stannis, Selyse, and Melisandre. Since it's an all-book readers podcast this week, I do have a question for the three of you. As someone who has read the first book only, I'm curious as to whether you would recommend reading all the books before season 6 starts, or just finish out the TV show and not worry about reading the books. Personally, I've decided to go ahead and finish the remaining books, but a friend, who has read them all, told me not to bother because the TV show will spoil the books anyway. Your thoughts? What do you guys think?
Okay,
first of all, I'm curious. Did he start the first book after the show? Because if not, how did he not read the other, at least a couple more books. That I do not understand.
I don't know.
Okay, David, you're the really expert book reader. What do you think?
It is hard to put them down once you start, so that's a good question. I would say read away. I don't think you're gonna miss anything. There's so much detail there, and now there's so much that's been changed. I would think anybody who likes this story would enjoy reading those books. And I don't think it's gonna spoil.
No, anything. Not at all. If anything, it's gonna elucidate so many of the minor details that you may not pick up on or may not have noticed. I mean, for instance, I'll mention one thing that's a little bit room for book talk, but whatever. I think we could talk about this real quick is, look, Dany got on that dragon not to save Drogon, but because she was afraid everybody was going to be torched in that arena, including her friends. You know, that was what was going on in her mind in the book. So, you know, it gives you certainly certain insights into character motivations and, you know, even small little things you see with their face that they do or little emotions, you know. So, yeah, I'd say go ahead and read it. It's not going to spoil anything, especially at this point. At this point, us book readers, we're getting spoiled by the TV show. This whole Shireen nonsense, and you know, that's...
Reading these books is at a slower pace because it has to be and it's in more detail because that's the difference in the two media. And I noticed, you know, but we're on equal footing now, but when I watched Game of Thrones with Karen, because I had read the books in those middle seasons, I had a big advantage in the TV show.
Oh, yeah.
And not because she's not a very sharp watcher, she is, but it's so complicated and there's so many characters. It really does help you follow along. So I think even in retrospect, if you were to go back and read, a lot of things would fill in and make maybe a little more sense.
Oh, yeah. No,
very true.
100%. I mean, and yeah, as you have all three of us here who are book readers, yeah, Lloyd, you're going to get a unanimous. Read the damn books. They're great. But he talks about food way too much. But other than that, they're great. All right. Well, I think we've wrapped up with the letters. What do you say we get into some book talk?
Okay. Yeah, let's do.
We don't have to put anybody in a box, so let's dig in. Well, how do you guys want to approach this? I mean, we've got this thing of Shireen, not in the books, you know, at all yet.
Yet,
so
at least.
Davos was already in a different place altogether when all of this was going on. If I recall correctly, Melisandre is still at the wall. She's not even there with Stannis. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That's true.
No. She's at the wall with Shireen and her mother.
Okay. So, you know, very different. Let's move on to Arya. She does end up killing somebody else other than the thin man, the insurance salesman, but it isn't Ser Maron Trant. He's not there in Essos at all. Neither is Mace Tyrell. So another big difference. Actually, if I recall correctly, the Iron Bank representative, who is Mark Gatiss in this, he's actually in the snow with Stannis with his really big weird hat, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, that's true. So I'll jump in and say this is an area where I'm torn as a book reader and have been really much of this season with all these changes coming in. So I really like watching the show and not knowing what's going to happen next, which is sort of the point we've arrived at because we've made enough changes and gone far enough off the books or getting to the point where we're about to be ahead of the books. So that part is enjoyable. But on the other hand, as the showrunners try to compress this story into 7 seasons and to try to make the show dramatic, I don't think they're as good writers as George R. R. Martin is. And a lot of the events revolve around huge coincidences.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so now all of a sudden Maron Trant shows up and, oh, look, another huge coincidence. You know, they're all standing in the same place at the same time, like characters from two or three different storylines.
And he likes little girls, and, of course.
And it just, it is moving the story along, but it's just a little clumsy. And I think they've fallen prey to that quite a bit this season.
Fair enough. Yeah, especially with the Arya thing. Yeah, you're right on that, for sure. What else happened in this episode that we can talk about? Everything in Dorne, totally different. I mean, this is just radically different. And Myrcella and Trystane do not go to King's Landing. I mean, Myrcella is missing an ear and has a facial scar at this point. We didn't get any Dark Star. Arianne is not even in it. The Sand Snakes are useless. I mean, it's everything about Dorne is just so radically.
I mean, Nymeria Sand was the one that was supposed to be on the Small Council.
Nymeria Sand, and of course, also, you know, what about this whole notion of Dorne takes their? They've always believed in a female, a matriarchy, and as far as the lineage is concerned. So, you know, does this mean for future books, does this mean Tommen is going to die soon, which will then go to Myrcella as queen? And I guess historically, talking to my buddy Alex at work, who is not only a Game of Thrones expert in every which way, shape, and form, he's also a huge history buff. And it was kind of funny because he was saying, it's like, look, if you look at history, this would be like Edward or Edmure. He couldn't remember the king that was a young king that came in. And he did not rule for very long. He died. And then his queen, which in this case would be Margaery, only ruled for about 9 days. And everybody said, "You are not our queen," and lopped off her head and brought in his sister. And this was Elizabeth the First's sister, I believe. This is all about the War of the Roses, who then became queen. And after her, that didn't work out so well. And then it went to Elizabeth, who in analogous terms would be Sansa, would be next in line. So it's this interesting thing that could mirror actual history. So I'm dying to see how this is going to play out. However, Dorne hasn't brought any of this shit up, and everything in Dorne is just ass backwards as far as what happened in the books. So we don't have anything to go off of, do we? What about Jon returning back to the Wall? Now, actually, he never left in the book, so yes, he didn't return to the Wall.
Right, but we're kind of back to where we were in the books now. Melisandre is not there, but and some other details are changed. But basically, he's in essentially the same situation.
And 1-1, who in the book is kind of more of a big puppy dog, he's there as well. So I get happy with one dar one deg one. I think that's it. I love 1-1.
But as far as John goes, I have the feeling that he is going to be really, really, things are going to get really, really stabby.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be next episode. I mean, and do you think Ollie's, I mean, for some reason, I don't think it's going to be Ollie behind it. Maybe. I feel like we're getting misdirected with Ollie, that it's going to come from another source.
I hope so, but I don't know.
It's Bowen Marsh, I believe, who leads that stabbiness in the book. And Bowen Marsh is in the show. So will it be him? Will it be Ollie? We have a wide assortment of characters who want John dead. So I'm curious how this is going to go down. I think all of us are in agreement, even though in the book it leaves off with a big, with the big question mark, is he dead? Is he not? I do not for one second actually believe he is dead. What do you think, David?
I think it would be a hard character to kill off in story structure, but I mean, George has never been afraid to kill anybody off.
No, he isn't.
The one factor that John has going for him in the book, I think, is Melisandre and Lord of Light's penchant.
That Melisandre's there.
For resurrecting, the Lord of Light can resurrect characters that to serve the Lord of Light.
Ooh, maybe they'll have another completely random coincidence, and Thoros of Myr will just happen to show up,
right?
Because Melisandre's not there,
right? But so without her there, he seems in a more precarious position if the same incident occurs.
Now, unfortunately, we also know Kit Harington.
Well, maybe Davos will arrive just in time to go back and then bring Melisandre back.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know.
Now, Kit Harington is contracted for the next two seasons. So we kind of have that going as a spoiler, I guess, that I think he's going to be around. So I don't. You're right. George R.R. Martin has never pulled punches on who he will or will not kill, as we saw this episode. But
usually if a death is not shown, they're not really dead.
And we didn't see that in the book. We just know he was stabbed and steam was coming out of the wounds because it was so cold. That's what I remember. For some reason, I remember, you know, them steaming. I don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen with that, but I cannot wait. I think it's going to be tremendously excited. Now, on to Drogon and the fighting pits and Dany. And, man, what we saw on the show was not at all the way anything went down in the books.
No.
Except for her getting on board the dragon and taking off.
Sure.
His Dar is still alive, right?
Yes, in the books he's still alive.
He's still alive. Bigger asshole in the books.
Much slimier in the books.
Dario may not be alive. I have a feeling he may be dead in the books, but we don't know that. I mean, that whole situation is so totally, completely different. I mean, Tyrion and Jorah and Penny are still in the circus outside the wall. There's the Pale Mare. And I understand they refer to what Martin got himself into with Meereen as the Meereenese Knot. That is just so complicated, and that's part of why. No, I understand that was a big chunk of the reason why the Dance of Dragons was delayed as long as it was he was trying to figure out a way out of this Meereenese Knot. And he got around it by Drogon showing up and her taking off. So everything she set in motion, she left behind. It's still going on there in Meereen, but she's now off in the desert, right? The Red Waste or something, bleeding. Mm-hmm. Possibly miscarrying and all this other stuff. So and that may pop up in episode 10. I don't know. What do you guys think?
David?
It's hard to know where they're going with it. It wasn't at all. It was not an easy or happy ending to that storyline in that book. She sort of didn't know what she was doing on the dragon. It wasn't comfortable. She ends up in a really bad place. And without it being clear how she was going to get out of it. I did like everything that led up to it in the book. The intrigue of Hisdar and her feeling pressured into the marriage and the poisoning attempt. And
was that the spicy honey locust? Was that where Strong Belwas ate all of the locusts and he got sick?
We didn't ever get him.
Yeah, since there was some good detail and character that dropped out of this whole thing as they sort of hurried through it, I thought.
You know, I got to say, that's one character that definitely bummed me out that did not make it into the show, a Strong Belwas. His little vest, his scars all over him. And eating the locust. For some reason, like, his glee at eating those, it reminded me of, like, when I get a big thing of, like, honey roasted peanuts or these wasabi soy almonds that I love so much. There are certain foods that, you know, classic Lay's potato chips. You get certain snack foods in front of me, I will eat them like he eats those spicy locust, man. And I felt for him. I'm like, I love that scene. I love that character. And I'm so bummed he's not there. And I got really excited at the thought that, you know, a listener wrote in that maybe the person who freed Tyrion was supposed to be Strong Belwas. But that didn't come to fruition. That didn't pan out.
Yeah, I didn't think he was Strong Belwas, but I did earlier in the season think, oh, maybe he could actually show up the season. But no.
And now Ser Barristan is dead, so Strong Belwas has no companion. That made me sad. So.
Oh, well.
Do you guys have anything else you want to mention about the books?
David, I'm sure you do.
The only other thing I was going to mention about the books is going back to the Dorne story, which is, I would say, in the book much, I don't know if darker is the right word, but I thought it was sort of a good portrayal of a grasping mid-level house as they sort of sent Quentin Martell on a what really turns out to be sort of a fool's errand. And that's the big plan. But
yeah. Poor Quentin.
But in the TV show, they've really almost used that story just as comic relief. I mean, first it was a buddy picture, and then, as you say, they had this sort of funny eye for the eye thing with Braun, who's kind of always a jolly character, although violent. And you know, Jamie's always witty, but nothing terrible ever seems to happen in that storyline.
Yeah, it was an odd choice all around, the choices that they made with the Dorn storyline.
Yeah, it's much rougher in the book, and some bad stuff happens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Darkstar. Where the hell's Darkstar? Oh, well. We're never getting Darkstar. There's just a whole host of things we're never going to get. oh, well. Different media.
Yep, so it goes. Yep.
So it goes.
Let's not lament
any of that. Yeah, me too. So let's go ahead and move on out of book talk and straight back into the show. And again, nobody has to get out of a box this time.
Yay.
Okay, well, why don't we go ahead and kick into next week on Game of Thrones.
Next week on Game of Thrones, Season 5, Episode 10, it's the season finale, Mother's Mercy. Ooh. Stannis marches, Dany is surrounded by strangers, Cersei seeks forgiveness, Jon is challenged. Director David Nutter also directed this week's episode, The Dance of Dragons.
I'm sorry when you said Jon is challenged. That just, I don't know, something about that made me laugh.
It's challenged. It might be an understatement.
Mentally challenged?
Yeah, something like that. Something's wrong with John. Okay. Again, that doesn't tell us much yet. Dany is surrounded by strangers. Interesting. Actually, that has me intrigued.
That's a good teaser.
Of everything else, I'm like, that has me intrigued. Of course, Cersei's going to seek forgiveness. She's in a pretty bad spot. I can't wait to get to that.
And if Stannis marches, something must have turned around for him, because he was in no position to march this week.
Well, you know, and this is going to piss us all off, because I have a feeling R'hllor is going to pay attention and he's going to pay out for his sacrifice, and it's going to piss everybody off again.
Yeah, so R'hllor will probably come through, but we're not going to be rooting for him.
No, we're not going to be rooting for him. No, no way, shape, or form. So, yeah.
Okay,
fuck you,
good
Stannis.
Stuff.
David Nutter. Okay. Well, if he did this week's episode and then next one, that'll be interesting. We'll see. All right. You guys ready to wrap this up?
Let's do it.
Cool.
I am.
If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can call us at 813-563-3739. That's 813-Joffrey. Remember him?
If you would like to write in, you can email us at game@podcastica.com.
You can check our website at gameofmicrophones.com.
We're also on Twitter at Podcastica and on Facebook at facebook.com/podcastica.
And be sure to check out our other first-class podcasts in our network at podcastica.com.
Join us next week for the Game of Thrones Season 5 finale, Mother's Mercy, with hosts. Well, we'll let you find out next week.
Oh. Ooh, mystery.
All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
And don't dance with dragons.